Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'll leave you with this with Dustin Chaffin.
You drive everywhere, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Like, I mean, if it's during the day going into the city, I'll take the subway in.
Oh, okay. So you're still, you know, schlub with the rest of us.
Yeah.
In the subway.
Yeah.
Subway's insane, man. I don't know if you've taken it at 3 in the morning lately, but it's like, and it's really amazing because it's like, there's just... It's just really the definition of, like, everybody cohabitating together. Because it's, like, the people in the worst circumstances, you know, and then, you know, then there's a girl with a Louis Vuitton bag. And, like, you know, it's like everybody's in there together.
Yeah.
And it really shows you that, yeah, we can get along.
You know? Right.
You look at, just ride the E-train at, like, 3 a.m. You'd be like, well, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know why there's so much fighting going on in the world. When it comes to getting home and being warm. Everybody seems to get along.
Yeah. Yeah. Those, I mean, those 3 a.m. trips, though, like, you just never know. That could wind up being like a 3-hour odyssey, right?
If
changes tracks or there's a delay or there's, right? There's a million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, where'd you grow up? Like here?
I grew up in Queens. Yeah. A little further east in Belrose. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
About 30 minutes from here.
All right. So you've always had the chaos.
Like, pretty much.
Used to the city.
Life. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine that, being a kid and just, you know, just going into Manhattan when you're 14 or something. Like, I don't even know what that's like.
Yeah. I mean, it was still kind of like special for, I'm one of five. So, like, for my family, like, going into the city was still kind of a big deal.
Okay.
We were far enough from, you know, it was like a 40-minute drive into the city.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was still like, and we had cousins who lived on like 95th Street or something. So we would go in, but it was kind of like a special occasion.
Okay.
Know? It wasn't like I was like, you know, riding the subway and,
like,
you know.
Like the Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Matching vest with your buddies.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny because that was what I, you know, living in Texas, like, that's all I knew was either Woody Allen movies, whatever, you know, songs people were singing about New York, Lou Reed, or, you know, movies like The Warriors and Taxi Driver. So it's like, I was just, you know, I kind of wanted that seediness, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for some reason. Just.
And it's funny because, like, most people associate Queens with, like, Coming to America or something, like Eddie Murphy movie.
Oh, that's right. It was Queens, right?
Yeah. So like, when I say Queens to so many people, that's, you know, that's what they think. But I was so far from the city, and also, like, I wasn't even in, like, a congested part like we are here in Astoria.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you know, the suburbs, really. It was just families, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So although I was, like, in Queens and in New York, like the kind of New York you're describing, it was just as foreign to me. You know?
Oh, yeah. That's crazy. It's funny. I lived in Chile out of high school. And
oh, wow.
I was a missionary and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, I said Texas, that's where I was from, and everybody just, you know, the TV show Dallas. Like, they called me J.R., you know, because it was like, that's all they knew was, like, Dallas and the Ewings. And, you know, it's just really funny how... It is funny how television across different places, you know, that's how they identify how we are, you know.
Yeah. And I guess the lack of travel, too, by especially so many Americans. But it's probably just human nature that you latch on to. Like, if I say I'm a New Yorker, people think of, like, a certain thing.
But thank God for comedy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Think of how many places we've seen because we have, you know, goofy jokes. You know, we get to, like, see the world.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I never found my, you know, like Sweden or Japan or all these. I know you've been to crazy places too. And it's like, just, you know, who thought that little joke on a napkin would turn into this and an open mic and a thing. And then you're seeing so many things.
It's true,
stuff,
man.
Telling jokes. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just did a run through, like, Iceland and Norway, Sweden,
awesome.
You know? So yeah, like, it's important to, like you just said, you know, to think of it in, even in those simple terms of, like, you're seeing the world because of, like, you know, these thoughts that you have. And
yeah, because that little drive to say, I can do this, you
yeah,
know?
Right.
Today on I'll Leave You With This, very special guest, been on Letterman many times, Conan, Amy Schumer Show, Dr. Katz, which that was such a great show. Ladies and gentlemen, Comedy Central Specials, Mr. Ted Alexandro.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Great to have you, man. It's funny how like I feel like comedy's like high school. Like we're in high school, and then some of us go on to different colleges, and so we don't see each other for a while.
Right.
And it's like a podcast is kind of like the high school reunion. Like,
it's true. Yeah.
It takes something to even get us to hang out. We would all probably be friends if we realized, you know, how cool we are with each other. But it takes a podcast to be like, oh, okay, we'll actually sit down and talk.
Yes.
It's got to be recorded and posted, but we're gonna talk.
Right.
God forbid we go to a coffee shop. You know.
Yeah.
Just catch up.
Right. Just to be like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, I've known you a while, you know, in and out. You know, I feel like sometimes we'd kind of be in the same club and sometimes not. And
yeah.
You know, I remember you from the old Gotham a lot.
That's right.
I think that's where I probably saw you the most. You knew me pre-cowboy hat.
That's right.
The old Gotham. I miss that club, the old one.
The old Gotham was one of the best rooms in the city.
It really was.
You know?
It was like the right size. I mean, the new one's fantastic, but it was like, there was just something special about that, kind of like a Boston Comedy Club feel.
Yes, on the smaller side, a little weird in terms of the contour of the room. Like there were little pockets, you know, like there was like a little balcony, if you can call it that.
Yeah.
It's weird, like what rooms work and what rooms don't, for whatever reason. But that one did.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting how some of the best rooms in the world is a hallway to a bathroom. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Sometimes.
Yes.
Like, there's just certain clubs you're like, how is that such? And it just works.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
I mean, it's just certain places. And that place was fun. And I liked it that the bar was underneath, you know, so everybody could go down there. There was never any bar chatter, really. People could just hang out downstairs in the bar.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of something that's like a little bit lost is, you know, the Strip had it years ago. Like places where the comics could just congregate and hang out, you know. The Cellar has it.
Sure.
But yeah, Gotham had it too. Like that's worth its weight in gold, just like that you feel welcome.
Yeah.
And you know that you can just hang out and there isn't like, you know, you're not in the way and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely changing, you know. You know, you started a while ago, like 100 years.
About 25. Yeah, 25 years. Clay, it's getting there.
Isn't it amazing? It's
like, it is. It's crazy.
That you could just do this for that long.
It's nuts. Yeah.
It's just like, I saw a tape of you, and it's like, you know, one of those old, like when you first started things, I think you posted. And, but it was great. Don't roll your eyes because you had, it was funny because I think I told you about it when I talked to you once, but you have this, like, almost like the same delivery. Like your delivery was already there, which is, I'm still trying to find mine. Like you already had it. You were like, just start. I mean, your jokes weren't what they are, but that delivery, I'm like, oh my God. Like, how does he know how to do that at like 19 or whatever?
Well, thanks. Because I felt horrified, you know, like, of course, you just, obviously you kind of scrutinize and criticize yourself more.
Yeah.
There were some things, because that was literally the one you're talking about was literally the first time that I ever did it, you know.
Yeah.
That video I posted it on Facebook a while ago, so like, I mean, it's always like a little bit cringing to watch anything you've done, but especially that far back, you know.
Yeah, well, it seems like you just had a sense of yourself, which is very hard for comics to find sometimes. Like
early
on, even if it was conscious or you were nervous or whatever, you know, and your delivery is something I always talk about where I feel like it's just, you know, I could listen to you, you know, read a phone book kind of thing. It's like Coltrane.
I'm working on a phone book bit.
I think it
might have been because of having done a lot of like community theater and high school theater. So I was very used to performing on stage.
Oh, well, that's huge. Yeah.
That helped, you know. And even music, I had played piano and stuff. So being in front of people was not foreign to me, but okay. You know, the stand-up thing is, it's a different muscle.
No, I think that definitely makes a big difference, because I'd never done anything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, I was like, you know, I did the props in the theater in my school, you know, stuff like that, painting backdrops and stuff. So it's like, was never in front of a microphone. I was terrified. And took an acting class once. It was just awful, and just the experience of it was just terrible.
Wow.
And I remember I got opportunities I wasn't ready for early on. I don't know if you had any of those.
Yeah,
I remember 6 months in.
You're still getting things like that.
6 months in, I'm reading with Rhea Perlman for a pilot. 6 months in, I knew nothing.
Wow!
Like, and I was just terrified, and I didn't know how to look or read a script. I didn't know how to do anything. Yeah. It was like
that show was Cheers.
Yeah, exactly. it was her spinoff. She goes back to college.
Yeah, Carla. Whatever.
Yeah, Carla, she goes back to college, and then she's like, you know, they want a bunch of college kids around her.
Yeah.
And then I had this look, long hair, whatever. It seemed to work with, you know, the look, but I think Zach Galifianakis put a showcase together when he was with Kerry Hoffman at Stamp New York.
Yeah.
They just happened. It was like almost like a bringer show, but hey, there's industry, one of those.
Right.
And then I just happened to get it, but it's like,
wow.
But just terrified.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just like could barely get through it, you know?
And it's and that's kind of like that's the absurd beauty of stand up is like you just start with this basic notion of like trying to put some jokes together.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, there's nights where you don't know who's sitting in the crowd or, you know, a comic has some gig for you or, you know, things that, like, the path just keeps unfolding.
Yeah, it's like you're ziplining all the time. You know, like, it's like you just don't. That's what keeps us in it. Even when it's like some of us get a little further, some of us have to work a little harder. Some of us make a little more money. But it's like I couldn't quit it if I tried, you know. And that's why I tell people when I talk to young comics, I go, you just can't quit and you're fine.
right.
Try to write, obviously, and be original and don't quit. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. keep showing up.
Yeah, just keep showing up because it's like eventually something will happen for you or maybe it'll open up for you.
Right.
You know, like Amy Schumer, it was really good timing for a female comedian like her to come along.
Yeah,
like there was, you know, we needed it. And so she slotted herself in this situation. And it's like, that's the thing. You know, she'd quit 5 years ago, you know?
Right.
It's like, I feel like that's just really what it is. It's a long haul.
Yeah, because like you said, there's times where you don't see somebody for a while.
Yeah.
And then you do see them and you're like, oh, wow, they really grew, you know? Or like they have jokes that you hadn't seen. And
That always pisses me off because like, I just wanted to like, you know, just be like, oh, you're not any good. And then you're like, oh, damn it.
Yes.
You just want to label people.
Yeah.
And like, oh, that's good. And that's really tough though. That's why I tell people, you know, because you know these young comics sometimes it's like, you know, they want it too fast. And it's just like, you will be labeled, you know. Like, if you get up too quick and you're not good, then people will see you that for a long time, see you that way.
Or you're too pushy and, you know, you get labeled with that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That sticks, you know, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, how did you, like, when you started, who did you first start opening for? Did you have comics that you went on the road with early on? Did you... remember guys that you kind of worked with that took care of you? Or
not really like early on in terms of working with somebody. That came later.
Yeah.
Early on, like the biggest kind of mentor, I guess, that I had was this Long Island comic named Jim Myers. Because I used to do both the Long Island scene and the New York scene because I was kind of halfway between both. Okay. So, you know, when I started early 90s, there were like three or four really good rooms on Long Island that had like good open mic nights that you could be in front of just a crowd of civilians. It wasn't like, you know, a bringer show or anything like that. So I would go out there. So Jim Myers was this veteran comic who had been around forever, really funny guy. And he saw me and said, you know, I'd like to introduce you to my manager if you'd be cool with that. And I was like, you know, and I was only doing it like maybe 2-3 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So I was like, wow, a manager? Great. Like I was always like very just focused on working and trying to figure this out and get better.
Sure.
So I would say like I was not very business savvy. And to this day, I kind of remain like that's secondary to me.
Yeah. Were you teaching and doing comedy at the same time?
I was, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was teaching elementary school music for the first 5 years of doing stand-up, too.
Wow.
Yeah, right out of college, so.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah. So Jim Myers hooked me up with my manager, Jeff Sussman, and that was really my entree to, like, road work and all that kind of stuff and getting paid. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's amazing. So teaching kids like that. So when you hear a recorder, do you like cringe and have a flashback?
I do. I do.
Break out in sweats.
I do. Like PTSD. Yeah. People still send me videos like thinking it's funny. Like, oh, check this recorder. And I do.
Triangle. You're like, how?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I tried to make it as cool as I could.
Sure.
This, you know, we'd play like, you know, the song Lowrider.
Oh, yeah.
So we like, I would try to do some fun things,
yeah.
But it was still the recorder, you know? So,
yeah. That's so funny. I wonder, have you gotten contact with any of your younger students at all over the years? Or?
You know, some of them have shown up to gigs and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I remember one time I was at Caroline's and there was a group. And I might have even been doing some material about having been a teacher.
Okay.
And someone yelled out. And there was like a group of maybe 7 or 8 of them and their parents. And by this point, they were probably like 20.
Oh, wow.
You know, years old.
Wow.
So when I taught them, they were, you know, maybe they were 9 or 10.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, pretty bizarre. A couple of them I've kept in touch with. There's one guy who's like a hip hop artist.
Oh, cool.
He does
it. That's all you, bro.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I was like, I guess my work is done.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So he comes, like, he'll pop by the cellar.
Okay.
I guess maybe he does shows in that area or something, but he pops up. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, it's pretty bizarre, like, because now they're, the kids that I taught in my earliest years are, you know, probably between 25 and 30.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Man, time just keeps clicking, huh?
It does. It does.
And, I just, you know, that's... Did you feel early on that you kind of like, did you find a transition in your comedy? Like, I feel like, you know, were you decided to take certain risks and be yourself, or were you kind of like a, you know, like a joke writer? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, I don't know if there was like a moment where you said, you know, like with Carlin, like, you know, I'm going to be this kind of comic as opposed to just, you know, pandering or whatever.
Right. I think early on, I was more of a joke writer. I was just like writing jokes. Maybe there was some autobiographical stuff to it, but it was more just about like trying to find the perfect wording and just reciting it that way every time. But then as I went along, it became a little more personal, a little more sociopolitical too, some parts of my act. I think 9/11 was a big shift for me where just like all of the things that that entailed and also being a New Yorker, you know, that kind of awoke in me like a lot of just curiosity about the way things work,
you know?
So I think that impacted my comedy directly in terms of doing some joke, some material about it, but also just that worldview of like questioning kind of, I think, helps inform.
I mean, now it's just, it's insane, you know? Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because sometimes, you know, I'll think I can like throw something out in an audience, like some Pennsylvania firehouse or something, and I'll do some like little subtle anti-Trump, just kind of like making fun of him. And it'll just get quiet.
Yes.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, it's funny, I was watching this documentary, Wild Country or something about the...
the cult?
Yeah.
The religious group,
same stuff. Yes. It's like the way that they are. It's just like, I mean, it's insane how much loyalty and whatever.
Yes.
And it's just like, and I'll just be like, it's comedy. We've been making fun of presidents for years.
Yes.
You know, that's what we do. Jimmy Carter, look at him. He's got big teeth. And look at Reagan. He's old. He can't remember anything. And it keeps going. Going, you know, Monica, you know, and then it's like, but it gets to Trump, it's like, just stop. What are you doing? You know,
yes,
it's insane.
It is.
Do you find yourself getting in trouble at all with crowds?
Well, you know, it's fascinating because I was doing a lot of political stuff in the run up to the election about both, because you know I wasn't a fan of either Trump or Hillary, so I was just kind of doing kind of broad view political jokes, and they were working up until he got elected.
Yeah.
And then once he got elected, there was this shift, I guess, of like his supporters being like, we're not taking this shit anymore. Like we kept quiet the whole campaign.
Yeah.
Because like I said, these were jokes that were working for 6 months or whatever.
Yeah.
But once he got elected, then they were emboldened to kind of shout out and stuff. And also when I'm, sometimes I open for Gaffigan. So like when I'm on the road with him, he doesn't do anything polarizing or political, so, you know, for the most part, I try to keep it down the middle.
Sure.
But I was doing some political stuff in front of his audiences, and it, depending on where it was, there were times when we were in red states or just more conservative pockets. Yeah. I think one time in Alabama where like somebody yelled, they weren't having the Trump jokes, you know? So yeah, it was interesting to see that shift. Like we, like you said, we're not even going to listen to this.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I can't even take it sometimes, you know, it's like, it's just, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's every day it's something. And I feel like as Jobs is, I mean, I feel like the court jesters, you know, from the beginning of time made fun of the king.
Yeah.
And that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, we're supposed to mock everything that's happening.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have to allow us to do that.
Yeah. There's a humorlessness about that group.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to say all Trump supporters because I don't
think. No, there's also the far left as well. Like, too left is a problem too.
Absolutely.
Too sensitive. You know, you hear one buzzword, they go crazy. Like, both.
Absolutely.
Anything extreme like that.
Yeah, yeah. People have lost their sense of humor to even hear certain topics, like, they'll shut down if, you know, on the left or the right.
Yeah.
If you bring it up. You know?
Yeah, I just never understand that in a comedy club, because comedy club's supposed to be like the speakeasy. You know, it's supposed to be like, you should have a little password you say to get in. Like, it's the dirty little place, you know, usually in cellars and basements. And like, you know, that's where you're supposed to be bad.
Yeah.
That's where you're supposed to hear the bad stuff. Like, jazz was, when it started, was considered like sex music. Like, you know, like, that's what, you know, comedy shouldn't lose that. Because it's
I agree.
Blogger, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's also incumbent on us to kind of stand our ground, you know? Like, but you have to do it within reason. Like, when I'm opening for Gaffigan, I'm opening for him. That's his crowd. And I don't want to ruin the show for him, you know?
It'd be great if one night you just flip out.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, so I don't like Kale.
Yes. Yes. You know, so yeah, I can't make it about me when, you know, that's part of maturation too.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you know, like when you're younger, maybe you dig in more and you're like, nobody's going to tell me what to do. But as you get older, it's like
I need that check.
It's a good gig. I need the check. Absolutely. Yeah. So you pick your spots though. So it's like, if I'm at the cellar or somewhere around the city, I have to make sure that I am challenging myself and I am kind of standing my ground and not backing off the things that are challenging to talk about, you know, because they're challenging to make funny. They're challenging to, like, even certain topics, like, you know, I do a joke about the national anthem now.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you bring that up, you know, people are, it's going to be a little polarizing and some people are going to want to hear it or not.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for us though, in the situations that we can, to test ourselves, you know,
and test the audiences, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like sometimes when I get up on stage, I feel it's, you know, part of what I want to do is sometimes convert them, you know, into like seeing that everything can be funny.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, I feel like, you know, that's part of the struggle sometimes, you know, just to try to like get them to kind of like just see that everything can be funny. You can laugh at anything.
It's true. It's true. But the fact of the matter is they do have final say on, you know, in that space for that night, at least, you know, each night, one to the next, it's like that group, that dynamic, whatever it is. And it's a million collisions of all these atoms and people. You don't know how it's going to work that night. But and that's what I think is the challenge. Like when you are talking about stuff that is like, you know, where you're a little bit more on the high wire.
Yeah.
You have to hit the center of the target. You know, they're not going to just laugh because it's like, oh, I see. He's really given a good, he's, you know, that's a tough thing to talk about and he's given it a good try.
Yeah.
You have to hit the center of the target. Yeah. And then, you know, then they'll walk away with what you're saying. They'll walk away with, oh yeah, you can joke about anything because I saw him do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the attempt.
Yeah, no, it's insane if you know that I'm still amazed by the art of stand up where it's just like that we, you know, we create this thing, we write this thing, we perform this thing, and then it's like, and we still, the reaction to what strangers give us dictates how good it is. And it's still amazing to me.
It is fascinating.
That we
yeah.
still, like a sound that comes out of a human being is what tells us whether this is good or not. Like, it's the yeah. craziest thing.
It know? Is bizarre.
It's
yeah.
just, because it's like, you know, if somebody looks at a Picasso, like if, you know, like they just read a, like it's just the weirdest thing.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it's the only art form that is kind of democratically decided upon, you know, in terms of, it's democratically edited, essentially, yeah. right? Because, like, we go with our prepared material, and they essentially say yay or nay, like, to
well,
this.
They have so much power. You know? They have so much power.
Yeah. yeah. but the thing is, it's not as though you're not before a judge or a jury. You're yeah. really just before this group of people that wants to be entertained.
Yeah.
Right? So that's yeah. what's so... that's the purity of it. It's like they don't have any ulterior motive. Yeah. They're just going to laugh if it's good, right?
Yeah, or they laugh because they have that light in them. Because some people, even if it's good,
right,
they
right.
don't. I've noticed, because you watch certain people, and you've been all over the world, and it's just like, you know, like in Sweden, I've noticed they clap a little more than they actually belly laugh.
That's true, yeah.
You know, so there's certain types of people that, you know, it's just not in them sometimes to make like this outward sound, like, you know, and it's like, and that's what, as comics too, we have to take that in consideration. It's like not everybody's like some drunk Jersey guy or what, you know, it's like belly laughing, going crazy.
Yeah,
like not everybody has that. And a lot of people, like when they're around other people, they're self-conscious and stuff. Yeah. And so it's like, it's just the psychosis of it is crazy.
It's a good point. Yeah. Because so, we've all had shows where at the end of it, you feel as though it was a crowd that didn't give up anything.
Yeah.
And then they come over and tell you how much they loved it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So yeah, it
is. People
like
that buy merch. They didn't laugh at all. What are you going to home and listen to this and not laugh again? Like, why are you buying this?
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that's what keeps me in it is just, I'm, you know, still always chasing the dragon. You know, I feel
yeah.
like it's always, you'll never master it.
Right.
You know, and it's one of those things that you'll always get better. You know,
yeah.
I feel like I'm better this week than last week.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of these, you constantly grow, I feel, as a comic. It's like one of the art
yeah.
forms that you just can just continually just get better and take more risk and mm-hmm. be more personal. And
right.
You know, it's just one of those things that you'll never quite be as good as you want to be, and that's what's great about it.
Yeah, if you're doing it right, you're growing, and it, hopefully it's a parallel growth with you as a person. You know, like you're
yeah.
challenging yourself just in terms of the way you're living and
yeah.
what you're reading and what you're engaging with. Like, hopefully it's a parallel evolution to you as a person.
Well, that's what's great, too, is like, you know, it's like, there's a lot of ways to look at this when you get older, you know, and it's just like, I know there's a lot of comics that have that negative energy of like, oh, you know, I'm old and nothing's going to happen. This young kid's going to get on SNL and da-da-da-da. You know, they got this energy. And I feel like I'm way better now than I ever was then. Just
sure.
When I was in my 20s, because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Yes.
And now it's like you said, you know, it's like you have more life experiences or you're more well-read or traveled or whatever. And it's just like you can bring more to the table. And
yeah.
and there's quite a few adults that would like to see an adult, you know, do this as opposed to some kids. So
no, that's, you know, that's a good point. Yeah. Because, and that can be a frustration too with
yeah.
the business, because show business, like any other business, puts a premium on youth, you know,
yeah.
for a lot of reasons. One, just it's cost efficient to exploit the young up and comers who will do something for less.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, so you, like you said, there is a trap that you can fall into where, you know, if you see the business fawning over newer people or younger people, or you get bypassed for things. But, you know, those are the times that you have to kind of step back and get in touch again with the things, the reasons why you do it. And,
yeah.
you know, there's going to be plenty of opportunities for everybody ultimately.
Well, I get really angry when it comes to like... what people's definition of making it is, because,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think somebody was acting like Bill Hicks didn't make it or something. And I was like, what are you talking about? he had all these albums. I guarantee he had a big house. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, he toured and did all these things. I mean,
right.
tragic story, but But when he was being a comic, it was fantastic. It's of like, course. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's like people feel like, well, because it wasn't Eddie Murphy. He wasn't. He didn't even want to be that.
Right.
You know, he didn't
right.
want to do commercials. He didn't want to do those kinds of things. Like he had his own path, and he definitely was following it all the way through.
Yeah.
And so sometimes people, but even people that like, you know, that are doing well, I notice, like, you know, like I was talking to a friend of mine, and he does a lot of cruises, and so yeah, I did 12 cruises, and I was like, yeah, that's a lot of cash, dude.
Yeah,
it's like
right.
and nobody's putting a gun to your head. Like, you don't have to do these cruises. If I could be clean, I'd fucking do a cruise, but I can't, so I don't do it.
Right.
I run a room. That's what I do. I get it. So it's like insane to me. You know? It's like you're bringing like all this $3,000 a week. That's beautiful. Like, shut up.
Absolutely.
You know, remember when you couldn't even pay for a meal off of your comedy, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. I always get crazy when people are doing way better than they think they're doing. You know, they think that like there's just like this, they have to be in the top five of the Chris Rock things to be able to say that they've made it or something. That's not what it is. It's
no,
like there's
yeah.
different sections of it, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, and I think that's only really a trap to get you depressed and bitter if you fall into that.
Oh my God. You know? I mean, therapy really helped my comedy, you know. Therapy, mm-hmm. It's funny, I'm writing a one-man show with my therapist.
Is that right? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
It's like the best therapy ever. It's like I just bring in notes and I'm like, "Hey, what's this?" you know, do a type 5, but it's like, but cuz he knows my life.
Yes.
And part of my depression is not following through.
Yeah,
and doing stuff that I want to do and not being busy enough and being lazy. And so we found a way to just, you know, to keep me happy is by being productive.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to help me get this thing off.
Oh, that's
and
great.
It's like, but yeah, it's just, but the therapy itself is, you know, helps me with audiences that are shitty or negative energy with comedians or, you know.
Yes.
The industry itself and stuff. And it's because it's like you need to be balanced as a person to do this. You know, because you're going to try, because in the beginning, you're going to try to be, I'll just do shots and I'll do coke and I'll be crazy and I can be a rock star. And Kinison, that was obviously that didn't last. So there's certain guys, it's not going to work.
Right.
It's like,
I mean, it's all, I guess, ultimately, it's part of a life, you know.
Yeah.
So you might have phases where you are drinking and doing coke and doing whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, balance, I think, is ultimately the thing that's going to benefit you in the short term and the long term, you know? So it's important to find whatever that balance is going to be for you, if it's therapy, if it's working out, eating healthy, whatever the things are that give your life that balance, I find for myself it's the most important thing.
And also, I mean, you know, I think what I like about you is, like, you're one of these guys that, like, you could just rest on the laurels of being a good comic and then just be a comic and whatever. But I feel, you know, you're always trying to do stuff like your web series or, you know, trying to, you know, get things out there. And, you know, and I think that's, to me, that's the key is just projects, you know, just continually trying to do different stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And also just like thinking about what excites you. And then, like you said earlier, following through on it, that's the hardest part, because there's going to be, especially when you're doing things a little more independently, there's going to be so many roadblocks and things that where you could bail.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, in a way, I think comedy is a good kind of preparation for all the other things that you do, because it's about problem solving, you know, and with stand-up, you have to get so used to solving problems and so used to being persistent that when you take that skill set to like a web series or something else, you're very used to dealing with adversity and figuring out, all right, we can't do this, let's try this, or this person can't make it, let's try that person, you know, like whatever the problem is, you're used to solving problem.
Well, what I've noticed with you, and you know, it's like you're adjusting to the new landscape of comedy, and that's what a web series is, or something to that effect, you know, or podcast, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's because when we started, it was just like if you got on this, you know, Tonight Show, or whatever, then it was like the ball was rolling, but it's not that way anymore.
No,
you know,
no.
There's guys that have tons of those credits that, you know, nobody really sees it. They're watching other things, and there's so much, you know, out there now.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess you almost have to have a thing that keeps the conversation going with your fan base, if you want to call it that. Like, because they're not, obviously, people aren't going to be sitting in the clubs every night, so you have to kind of keep that relationship of like, oh yeah, I like this guy. He's got a podcast now. He's got, you know, this or that, so that you're building, you know, like, but yeah, when we started, I mean, like it is fascinating. I don't know if it's too grandiose to say, but maybe the people who bridged television was like a big thing, but to go from like pre-internet or even pre-cable, you know, I guess there was cable, but not to the extent that there is now.
Yeah.
Like our careers have really spanned this explosion in media, you know?
I tell you, the Marc Maron thing is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
He was like, he just, you know, and he's a guy that just, well, I'll do, you know, just marches to his own beat and just does his own thing. And then that was unbelievable what he was able to do with that in his garage thing and just the whole, you know, just how that thing popped like that. You know?
Yeah, and it's such a good kind of fable in a way, like for comedians. Like, here's a guy that was doing radio for a long time. He was like on Air America, like doing like political radio, really during the Bush years.
A little short lived, though. I mean,
yeah,
longer, but
right. But honing that muscle,
yeah,
and then, you know, kind of when he was at his wit's end a little bit, started the podcast and. You know, that muscle that had been honed in other things and doing stand-up for all those years. Sure. Like, it was just the right confluence of timing and his skill set. And, it's so weird.
I always loved watching him because I felt like he was always doing something a little different.
Yes.
And he just, like, he was the guy that would take the risk and not pander and just kind of, like, it was like this introspective, you know, kind of manic thing that was just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, he was really thinking on stage. It wasn't just reciting. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's... That was what was so great about Boston Comedy Club. You know, I talk about it a lot on this, but I feel like that was such a special place. You know, it was just, I feel like it was the CBGBs of comedy. Mm-hmm. It was just like this raw thing that was happening in there.
And, yeah.
You were there a little bit, right?
A little bit. Yeah, there was like, it did feel like an anarchist kind of energy. Like, is anyone really in charge of this place? Like, what's, you know?
Yeah, it was so, so many of us went through there. And like, I ran it at the end. And, you know, it was just like, just, I remember, just funny moments. Like, I think Patrice was in the back one time. Patrice O'Neill, he was throwing phone books at Kevin Hart when he was on stage, like making fun of his short thing. Like, it's just hilarious. That craziness was happening.
Right.
And then one time there was this guy, Romy Rome, and he was on stage and he had.
Yeah, I remember Romy.
Yeah, he had like a blinged out belt buckle and he had like this fancy Adidas thing. He had all this nice clothes. And then Tracy Morgan comes in and he's like, "Yo, Rome, you know what's wrong with you? You rock and roll too early." It's like, this kid's just like terrified. It was freaking Tracy, you know?
Yes.
And it's like just moments like that where you're just like, you can't even like, it's funny watching Crashing.
Yes.
Did you do an episode?
No.
I wasn't sure.
But I was fascinated by how well they recreated that room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was Boston. It was like the outside and stuff. Like, it was phenomenal. And the inside, too.
Yeah.
Really weird. It's funny how they're doing it because it's like it exists now.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like, they're trying to put it in the landscape of the village now. So it's kind of interesting that they did it that way.
Yeah, that is weird. Yeah. I spoke to Dove Davidoff, who plays like the guy, the comic who runs the room.
Yeah.
And he said, I guess they just did it here in Kaufman Astoria Studios. I think they recreated.
Oh, that's where they recreated the inside of it.
Because I had to ask him, I'm like, where did you guys shoot that? Because it looked exactly like the contours of the room and, you know. And he's like, they just, they rebuilt it, you know. And I guess that HBO money, they great. Well, spare no expense.
Pete was my barker at Boston.
Is that right?
Yeah, he was my barker. It was him, Jamie Kilstein, Nate Bergazzi.
Oh, wow.
And, they were Pete was a pretty good barker. Nate was terrible, but just too low-key.
That's really funny.
And Jamie, somebody just wanted to beat him up all the time. So it was like...
It's so funny.
But it was, it's funny because, and Pete, you know, just kind of moved up and different stuff. And, he gave me a little part on one of the shows. And it was cool.
Oh, nice.
And it was like, it was nice, you know, just kind of just being involved with him and, you know, his success and stuff. So it was really cool.
But
it's just like, that's the thing. You never know, you know,
right.
Who's going to like have a thing. And he's a guy that just, oh my gosh, like talk about a guy that just does everything.
Yes.
You know, I got a TV show, I got a podcast, I got a an HBO type show, like just boom, 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 always pumping it out,
right?
And it's like, even when like the talk show goes off the air, boom, doesn't even miss a beat, man. Just starts working on his show, and then you know, and it gets it to the right people, and it's unbelievable. You know what he's done is just crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and it speaks to what you said about like you got to have a project. I mean, I think it's always been the case that it helps to have something outside of stand-up.
Sure.
If you have something authentic, you know, I think if you force it, it's probably not going to really go anywhere. But if it's authentic to who you are, it'll find, you know, people to listen.
Yeah, well, and with, you know, somebody like Pete Holmes is like, you know, just so damn likable. You know, there's certain people, like I talked to people, I said, that's really key. You know, I was working with Nate Bargatze at Caroline's this weekend, and it was like, he's just so likable, you know. It's like, it's hard not to go on board with what he's saying, just because, you know. And that's a thing. Some people don't have that,
right?
But like somebody like Nick DiPaolo has to be funny as shit because he's not that likable. So he's just got to be fucking.
The jokes better be.
Yeah, they better be great because he's not likable at all. he's a great writer, and he's funny, and he's crazy, and that's likable to me because I know people like that.
That's right.
You know, but it's like I can see him really like, you know, grating the wrong audience.
Right.
But that's a funny guy. You know. That's
there's an audience for that too. You know, kind of like to what we were saying before. Like when there used to be a thing where, you know, any random audience would listen to Nick or Janine Garofalo or whoever, but now it's like it's so polarizing. Not to say that they wouldn't, but, you know, people might yell out more than they used to or interrupt because of, you know, what they're talking about.
Who's like a, you know, like a comic that you just admired like a lot as a kid or even as a comic, like old school guys or anything? Like who'd you listen to? Or
I would say like my parents had a few George Carlin albums. So I remember him specifically as being like a craftsman. You know, just even as like a, you know, 8, 10, 12 year old listening to those albums, Class Clown or different things like that. And then as I got into it, you know, there's that bizarre shift of like guys that you've seen on television are, you know, you're on the same bill as them or they drop in or whatever.
Sure.
So like Dave Attell was one.
So funny.
Yeah. I mean, always has, he never does the same set twice, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah. He's a machine.
Yeah. His jokes are so funny. Did you ever see Carlin live?
Yeah. I saw him once out at the old Westbury Theater. Now it's like whatever bank thing, but on Long Island, I saw him when I was
great
in college.
To see live.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember. I saw him working out some specials and things a couple of different times.
Yeah,
just have the papers on the stool and just kind of like looking through it and stuff.
Yeah, he had a little bit of that even on the show that I saw. It was like it was mostly polished, but there was a few like he would check notes.
Yeah, I remember he walked a bunch of people like in Vegas, they were, like senior citizens, and he was just like, "I'm George Carlin. Who did you think I was?" He's just like yelling at him. It's like, "What did you think you were gonna get?" You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't juggle. You know? He's like flipping out. It was fantastic. It was like a guy at that level just seeing him like snap a little on the audience, like get the fuck out of here, you know, that guy attitude is fantastic.
I always found that fascinating that he developed his specials in Vegas, you know, like that.
Yeah.
If like to me, if you had to pick like the worst place to do it, it would be Vegas. But I guess partially because he is Carlin, so there's this, you know, probably overwhelmingly the people that come are fans. But it did strike me, especially because of the nature of what he talks about and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't associate that with Vegas, but I guess when you're as big as he was, you know, that's a little different dynamic.
Yeah, well, he's probably doing, you know, 20 shows a week or whatever it is.
Yes,
so
yes.
Like, I think that's what, but.
Yeah, for sure.
And Carlin was always such a good example of like, do whatever you want in comedy. You can switch it up. You can change. You can, you know, there's no rules in it.
Yes.
You can like, there's no, I mean, prior to, you know, where it's like, you can start out one way and then shed that and become something else. And I think that's, you know, that's the thing is it doesn't matter what you do. That's the best part about this.
Yeah.
You know, you can experiment and take those chances and stuff.
Yeah. If you reach those points where you're really feeling frustrated and, you know, it's just that it's that ongoing conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
If you feel like I'm not maximizing or I could be doing something differently or, you know, like, or I'm doing the same thing and it's not satisfying.
Yeah.
Those are the pivot moments where, you know, for some it'll be really like a huge shift like Carlin was or. But, you know, for everyone, it's going to be a little different. But if you're kind of really listening to yourself and your heart of like, this isn't working for me anymore.
Yeah.
You have to kind of constantly make those little pivots.
Yeah. Carlin was always frustrating to watch because it's like, if you had anything that was somewhat even close to similar that he was doing,
yeah,
he just killed it. Yeah. And like, he just milked that thing,
yes,
and tagged and tagged and tagged and tagged and tagged. And he'd be like, well, I guess I'm just not doing
that. That's done.
Yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. The golf course thing, whatever it was, it's like, it's done. You can't even touch it.
Right. There's no meat on the bone.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And that happens sometimes. It's frustrating, you know, when you're just like, you know, you have a bit and you're just like, it's working and you're just like, this is killing. And it's not even a hack thing. It's just this guy just happens to be doing it.
Yes.
You know, and you're just like, I mean, because we're all kind of living in this world.
Right.
And it's like, you know, Chris Rock, his new special is phenomenal. But yeah, at the same time, I was like, oh, this is a couple bits. Some buddies were kind of playing with those kind of premises. And I feel bad for them because I'm like, ah, you can't do it. And I had some things like that happen in my comedy. And it's like, you know, there's really nothing you could do about it. You know?
Right.
You just have to keep writing and, you know, whatever. And it's funny because, you know, because if you keep doing it, somebody might call you out and then you're like, no, and then you go crazy. And you're like, I wrote it first. You know?
Yes, yes. Like, you know? Yeah, you kind of just have to make that decision. Like, if it's exactly the same, you kind of, like, that's it. But
have you ever had any run-ins where you felt like somebody was lifting and you kind of had to muscle a little bit?
Well, it's funny. Like, recently I had a lawyer contact me that, this French comic, I don't know if you've heard about this at all, this guy, Tomer Sisley.
Okay.
They call him the copy comic. There's YouTube videos. If you look up Tomer Sisley, there's videos that will juxtapose American comedians on one side of the screen and then him doing the act verbatim on the other side. So I did a joke about a cop on a bike and like, what's next? A cop on a pogo stick.
Yeah.
You know, this is going back like probably 15 years.
Yeah.
But it was on my, I think my first Comedy Central special. So he took that joke, and it seemed like he must have just watched a bunch of Comedy Central specials because it was people like, you know, Gaffigan, Judy Gold, Kevin Brennan, Chappelle. You know, you know, it was like he was taking just like anyone's jokes that had a Comedy Central special.
Okay.
And he's been, I guess, a touring working comic in France.
Wow.
So there's this lawsuit coming up, or I guess they're trying to build one.
Really?
Against this guy.
Is there a French law that's different than ours or some bullshit?
I don't even know, you know, because I was like, look, I'm not going to, you know, like initiate any lawsuit. I don't give a shit. It's like one joke. The guy, you know, I don't agree with it or condone it.
Yeah.
But like, I've had it happen in the past where this guy, Tucker Max, is that his name? He wrote a book, I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell.
Oh, yeah.
And he stole, I did this joke about getting a blowjob from a girl wearing a What Would Jesus Do bracelet.
Okay.
And I said, like, you know, Jesus would use less teeth. Jesus would work the balls.
Sure.
So that joke, which is pretty specific,
yeah,
was in his book, you know, about like him just telling a story as if it was...
Yeah,
his joke.
You've inspired a few people. I've seen it. You were the first one to do the CrossFit joke. And you have a couple of jokes.
Yeah,
Ted. You know?
Yes, the Jesus abs pops up a lot.
Yeah, you see people and you're just like, he's an idiot. But I mean, you know.
I think some of it is attributable to what you said. Like, it's a human experience. So, like, if it's just the observation, like somebody saying, like, Jesus has good abs, it's like, you know, I don't think that they're necessarily stealing it from me, but depending on where they go from there, you know.
I mean, I don't know. It's always suspect.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel our job, actually, I mean, even though it's like sometimes I hate watching comedy because I don't want to like have that kind of get in my brain somehow. Like,
right.
I don't want to watch too many specials. There's certain guys I love to watch, but I'm just like, I just don't want to, because when I first started, I saw too much Todd Barry.
Yeah.
And it was like, I just saw he was always at New York Comedy Club.
Yeah.
And then I started kind of morphing into Todd Barry.
That's so funny.
Like, hey. And I would just start talking like,
yeah,
hey,
man.
Guys, hey, those are speakers. And it was like, my brow started going down. And I just, it was just weird. And people called me out on it. And I was like, I'm not doing this on purpose.
Right.
You know, it's just
somebody,
happening.
Somebody good who you're around.
And I've seen there's some comics now that kind of lift his delivery and stuff. And sure. I'm just like, but I wasn't, and then I had to break myself of it, you know? Yes. I had to like, and I was like, no, Todd Barry, just like, I can't watch you. If I see him come in, I just leave.
Yes.
I don't want to go through that again.
Yes, yes.
But you know, but that does happen. But I think, but at the same time, you know, you have to be aware. So it's a tough, you know,
yeah,
to
yeah.
figure it out. But you know, we all kind of know. And the TV thing, I think, is a thing. If you do it on TV, that has to,
right.
that's an unspoken thing, but
right.
you know.
Yeah, because then it's easy to at least point to it and say, like, yeah, here it is, and here's the yeah. year that I did it. You
yeah.
know? But I don't, honestly, though, I don't sweat that too much
sure.
because, for one thing, I know, like, my own process of just writing and putting it out and then
yeah.
moving on after a while. So, you know, like, if there is the self-policing thing, too, of, like,
yeah.
If I see somebody doing something that I've seen you do or whatever, I'll say, oh, you know, Dustin has that joke. Or
yeah.
we all pretty much, if somebody is doing something that's too close, you know, especially to a friend, you'll
yeah,
say like,
sure.
oh, I've seen somebody do that. You
and
know.
The thing is, if I ever say it to somebody, a young comic or whatever, I'm not saying it, and it's coming from like, dude, trust me, you just don't want to be doing that.
Right.
It's not like I'm trying to call you out on something
yes.
and you're an asshole. I'm just
that's
saying
right.
it's going to be bad for you if somebody else sees you do that.
Yeah, yeah. You're know? Not even saying you stole that. You're
yeah,
saying it's...
Yeah, just so you know.
Yeah.
You know? Just as an idea, you know, just so you have a clue.
Right.
But, you know, I remember, you know, when you guys did the coalition, you know, for the comedians.
Yeah.
And that was such a, you know... an amazing thing, you know, that it was
yeah.
just like, it was so funny though, because part of it was funny.
Yeah, of course.
A bunch
of comedians
like standing in a room.
Yes.
And just like fighting for this money.
Yes.
But you know what? Every time I get, you know, $75 or whatever, I think we should raise it, by the way.
You and me
I
both.
Think you guys should get the.
You and me both.
Get back out there, you know?
So, yes.
But, you know, you guys fought for, you know, the rights of comics to make more money. Because it's easy for clubs to kind of overlook, you know, the reason people are coming in.
Right.
You know, and it's not just for the margaritas and the plastic cups, you know. they're actually coming here to see the comedy.
Yes.
And comics, you know, should be paid accordingly and, you know, whatnot. I mean, sometimes, you know, there is, like, I run a little room and it's like 60 seats and stuff. And, you know, and I have developmental, you know, guest spots and, you know, because,
right.
you know, it's 60 seats, you know?
Right.
You can't pay everybody
right.
$100 or whatever, so sometimes there yeah. are circumstances.
Right.
But I think it was, you know, but I think we'd have to kind of fight a little bit, you know, or comics or club owners and things will kind of just not care about us, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They're never going to take the initiative,
yeah.
like, to do it. You know, it really has to come from... either from somebody influential that they'll
yeah.
listen to or from the collective,
yeah.
which in our case, that was the case, you know, where they, so many people, like we had hundreds of comics kind of that were behind it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it wound up being a good thing and it raised it, you know, and that was significant and it's still, you know, it's not enough to live on, but it's,
yeah.
you know.
I always felt you guys should have gone for the, I always felt there should be a road standard. Because I feel like out there is like the Wild West. They do whatever they
yeah.
want.
Yeah.
<It's> like,
yeah, no, you're right. You're
you know,
right.
$200 and a hamburger. Like, you know,
yes.
it's like just crazy stuff out there.
Sure.
You know? But,
well, the thing is, too, that like everything is its own animal and we are kind
yeah.
of like independent contractors.
Yeah.
So even just taking,
yeah.
yeah, taking on New York
yeah.
as a whole was enough of an endeavor, you know, like because we did have comics contacting us from around the country,
really,
from LA, from even from around the world, like London and stuff,
yeah.
saying like, oh, can we like be part of this? And it's like, this is really specific to New York, because even LA, like I think they get paid like $10 or something,
yeah.
like by check or whatever.
$7.36 weird checks you get from like
yes.
comedy stores.
Yes, which to me is even more bizarre. It's like,
yeah.
why aren't you guys, why are you piggybacking on us? You should have been doing this 10 years ago if you're making $7 by check, you
yeah.
know?
Really
so,
weird.
Yeah. But for us, like, you know, it was good to know that like we were kind of inspiring other people to think that way.
Yeah.
But we were kind of knee deep in just trying to organize our own thing, you know.
Sure. No,
yeah.
I think it's, you know, and then I know, it, you know, maybe it led to, you know, other activism for you. I know you're very, you know, conscious of things that are happening in the world. And, you know, I think that's, and it's funny because I know you do a lot of stuff and a lot of people talk to you about it. But it's almost like when I think about you and all the things you fight for and the decency and things like that in this country, it's kind of like Chris Rock's, but it's like, you're supposed to take care of your kids. Like, you're supposed to take care of rights and people and look out, you know? And yeah. It's just like, that's, to me, it's like, yeah, it's like you're a model of what people should be doing. You know,
thanks.
I feel people are afraid to do it sometimes because of the backlash
right.
they'll get from either, you know, clubs or audiences or media or whatnot. But.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I think even the word activism is funny to me that there's a word for that, like for being active in yeah. what's going on around you, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, it's kind of been an organic thing, the same way the Comedians Coalition was an organic thing yeah. where it piqued my interest and just the conversations I was having with comedians more and more, people were unhappy with the pay. So then
yeah.
I was like, well, let's do something about this. And then, you know, as things kind of came up, Occupy Wall Street, I went down there and I just had that same feeling of like, yeah, these are the things that I've been thinking about. And,
yeah.
you know, Black Lives Matter and all these other things, you know, that I feel as though like we have to advocate for each other in any form, you know, like,
yeah.
because like, if it's just the people that are afflicted by it, it's probably not going to, you know, it's not going to, I don't like to use the word win, but it's not going to get the things that they're
yeah,
looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so
yeah, I mean,
just lending your voice to the chorus kind of.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big Dick Gregory fan and
yeah.
it's like, I felt like, you know, read his book that I can't say on my podcast.
right.
Every time I'm reading that book, you know, it's the N-word for people who don't realize it, but
yeah.
it's a book, and it's a fantastic book. It's about his life.
Yeah.
I remember reading on the subway, and it just says it right there on the thing, and people are like, whoa, hey, what's that? I'm wearing a cowboy hat reading a book called the N-word. Yeah. Not a good look.
That's great. That's great. Yeah.
But, you know, but he went out of his way to, you know, really stand up for rights and things, and I think that's,
yeah.
you know, we have that power. You know, we have a microphone.
Yeah.
We can write bits that might provoke people
right.
to think about things.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can always lend a hand and help and march and do stuff. But,
yeah.
But I appreciate you doing this. And, you know, thanks for, you know, inspiring me as a comic. I love watching you. And I hope you get to do more stuff that you want to do and keep telling
Thank
those
you,
jokes
brother.
And shaking it up, rattling the cage.
That's it. I appreciate
and,
that.
Got anything coming up? Anything cool?
I'm touring with Gaffigan through the end of the year.
That's
so that's,
amazing.
You know, if people are looking for dates.
That's a fun, balanced show. I like the two of you on the show because you're
thanks.
Very different.
Yeah.
I can see you complimenting each other.
Thanks. Yeah, it is. It's really fun to work with them too because like we're doing anywhere from, you know, 2,000 seat theaters up to, you know, 15,000 seat like NBA
that's,
arenas.
That's insane.
It is insane.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
so, yeah, that's
jokes.
Right, right.
It's crazy,
you know?
You know?
Yeah. So that's really cool. And then my new special is coming out, Senior Class of Earth.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So that I'm working with Bill Burr and Al Madrigal's company, All Things Comedy.
Oh, great.
So they're going to be releasing it, and then it'll be available on Amazon, iTunes, all
oh,
the
that's great.
Streaming.
Yeah. What's your social media stuff we can catch you?
Just at Ted Alexandro, tedalexandro.com. I'm easy to find.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening to I'll Leave You With This. I'm Dustin Chafin, our special guest, Ted Alexandro. Thank you, guys, and keep hitting it. Bye-bye.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.